And we're going to start with the news center this morning. Strong buffers can withstand global shocks. This is Dr. Siama. So, you know, the Israel, Iran, Russia, Ukraine, all those things. Dr. Siama says strong buffers can withstand global shocks. So what buffers do we have? On the financial front, what buffers do we have? Yesterday, we spoke about fuel needs and Kojo. It's interesting the kind of storage capacity we have. Post the show, we did some follow-ups, and we actually have data on private sector storage capacity and the public sector storage capacity. And trust me, if we even failed all that and there's a global crisis, we are not going to have enough oil to last us 3 months. And so when we talk about buffer, some of these things are very, very important that we create our strategic stocks to keep us going. Now, the news center also front page, 1,267 killed in 5 months. Motorcycles alone killed 582 people. This is related to our road traffic issues and crashes on our road. So as we said, if you have any concerns on road safety, just share them with us. We'll do the follow-ups because we are losing too many people on our roads. Accra East ECG to recover 200 million Ghana cedis in debt. They've shut down power to Ghana Water, right? And so that's also in the news. And Ecobank invest $24 million in salt projects, create 3,000 jobs. Fitch upgrades Ghana to be negative outlook stable. That's the stories on the news center.
Now, the Ghanaian Point, there's a story here that's of interest. First says ECG disconnects Ghana Water. Over 999.6 million debt, 1 billion Ghana cedis. We'll tell you more about that. Stay with us. Chairman Butte. So Butte takes over as NPP. Takes over NPP as N team takes medical leave. And don't let your parents down. Omani Boama urges Purdue students. And compassionate Julius Deborah Foot's liver transplant bills for citizen I Ghana's sick child. That's it on the front page of the Ghanaian Point.
If you go to the Custodian, minority endorses Fitch upgrade but cautions government against poor budgets. The Speaker of Parliament is here, an issue that worries all of us. He says he refused Mahama's NHI board chair offer. And the conversation is that why are we appointing MPs, even the Speaker of Parliament, onto boards when these people are supposed to be the people supervising these executive institutions to do right by us?
Simple. You cannot be a judge in your own cause, can you?
Yeah, you can't. You can't be a referee and a player at the same time.
It's as simple as that. So if you compromise the forum, the forum cannot demand accountability from you, because we're talking about the relationship between, say, ACTA forum. So it'd be between you, Kojo, and me, between us. And if I voted for you, I expect you to account to me. However, if I voted for you and then you get into position, and then instead of accounting to me and me staying away from it,
you bring me on board.
You bring me on board. Now, you bring me on board and I'm eating with you. People say if your mouth is full, you cannot talk. So how do you hold me accountable?
Like, I'm thinking about Adongo and how he was in opposition talking about the economy and pushing. And all of a sudden, Adongo is on the BOG board. How does this person...
See, and the problem starts from our constitution.
Yeah.
Now, the thinking itself, that because a government's budget was rejected. I mean, people have brought up other theories that, not all the members were in there. But the problem is that because a government's budget was rejected, we have said that, we need some members of parliament to be ministers so they can understand the executive. That thinking in itself,
we need to scrap flawed. That this members of parliament, a certain number being in the executive too.
If you want to be a member of parliament, go and be a member of parliament. If you want to wait for the president's appointment as minister, wait. If you catch his eye, fine. But the situation where people go to parliament and they go and catch the president's eye. And I remember when I was a parliamentary correspondent, they want to talk, there's budget. You hear them saying, "Enka sebia, kasa, kasa, na president, don't want one more post." And that's all they did.
Yeah, so Badmin says he refused Mohammed's NHI board chair offer. He doesn't want to be the referee and the player at the same time.
There's so much wrong with that. So much wrong with that. I mean, just think about it. Imagine you're a worker and your labor union leaders, you know, are supposed to be fighting for better conditions for you from your employer. The next thing you see is that this labor union leader and the employer, they are traveling all around the world and they are having fun. How can you feel any level of confidence that they will represent your interest and not the interest of the employer?
And you see, even the whole idea of social accountability is the rise of CSOs and the media in demanding accountability. Mm. But we've actually seen politicians even getting into that side.
Mm.
Okay? Offering positions to actually reduce account, it's like, as for us in this country, everything our politicians and our public officers do is to skip accountability.
Anyway, but Bambing would have been a great board chair, you know, former health minister, former MP for years, and all those things. He would have been a great board chair.
And he's currently a great speaker. Yes. So let's keep him in one
speaker
place.
Over board chair.
the bit about accountability. We'll come back to it. You know, I've been doing a lot of work on accountability these days.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to be said.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a lot to be said, and why we must be very careful. So you stay with us. We'll get into all of this. We'll get into the other conflict of interest positions that people in Parliament and other agencies of state find themselves in. We'll get into all of that. Yeah.
It's just not right, and we need to fix that. Now, the Minister of Foreign Affairs says the government will evacuate some 922 Ghanaians from Israel. That's also on the front page of the Custodian. And Afenyo Markin warns Mahama over judicial capture.
Okay, the Ghanaian Times for this morning: give career magistrates opportunity to upgrade at law school. Justice Bright Mensah, Justice Bright Mensah, I listened to bits and pieces of it. When the question about the age of consent, getting to 18 years, you remember his response?
Mm.
He says, "Can they wait?" Anyway. Now, at Ghana EU partnership dialogue. Reform global order to ensure equity and security, financial frameworks, President Mahama, and Fitch upgrades Ghana's credit rating to B- with stable outlook. Senior Traditional Council bans Queen Mother from public activities, and Adama Lache expresses satisfaction with appeals court ruling.
The publisher,
the back page says government considering scrapping blood processing fee. That's according to the health minister. And 3,000 smallholder farmers receive training in agriculture innovations.
The publisher leads with the story to do with Professor Angelo Foriata, the wife of Ken Foriata. She says, "My Ken has not run away." It's on the front page. Their opinion this morning is on flooding, and they write that the rains are here again to take lives and flood homes. And they are talking about city dwellers and how we need to plan our cities to prevent the flooding and the related matters.
The Ghanaian publisher says, two-term presidential limit, Mahama's SC nominees back restriction. There's always been that. I don't know where people get that idea from. The reading of the constitution is very simple.
But why does the restriction need backing?
Well, you know, because some people have actually toyed with the idea that there was the intention of the constitution was consecutive terms. So once you, you are voted out, you could come back and then you can serve consecutive terms. I do not think that Mahama is interested in doing that. And the constitution is so clear. Two terms. So, by 2029, 7th of January, President Mahama will be handing over to another person as president of the
Republic. I'm really surprised people are bringing this up. President says he's coming to leave a legacy in this term. Leave the man to leave his legacy and go home so that another person
that's
can.
That's why
come.
I'm even surprised at the idea that the restriction needs backing.
You know, like, but you know,
it can't stand on its own. You know, it must be backed.
You know, at some point, Andrew Ejapa Mensah had contemplated the idea of going to court to prevent President Mahama from contesting the NDC primary. And his argument at the time was that the Constitutional Review Committee's report, I think it's on page 1,000 or so, indicated that we should amend the law to allow a president who loses after his first term to come back. In fact, I'd actually seen that provision.
Hmm.
So his argument at the time was that, so per his understanding and understanding of that committee, the Professor Fiajo committee, it meant that if you were voted out as president after your first term, you had no business coming back. But of course, the reading of the constitution is very clear. Two terms. It doesn't say consecutive order of you. So if you finish, you go home. Still on the front page of the Ghanaian publisher, Fitch upgrade vindicates MPP's legacy as a minority. Government to evacuate 922 Ghanaians from Israel, and minority leader warns of legal crisis ahead. Let's get into it.
Interesting, 922 Ghanaians will be evacuated from Israel.
Israel, yes.
But there was a story about several Ghanaians in Iran refusing to leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get into the online news review.
And if you go online, if you go to MyJoy Online, there are big stories on MyJoy Online this morning. And you can also listen to us live on MyJoy Online 247. And oil, gold, travel at risk. Expert on Ghana's exposure to fallout from Middle East attacks. NPP thinks about themselves only and next elections. This is Omani Boama speaking. NPP to elect 2028 flag bearer on January 31, 2026. And Ghana has lost $11 billion to gold smuggling linked to UAE report finds. Kojo and Winston, remember when we started talking about the gold board, the data we revealed on gold exports, it gives some credence to this report that we are reporting lower figures, but outside they are reporting higher figures when it comes to our gold.
And you see, Kojo, this thing about the gold, you know, the just imagine, okay, just imagine if in 2024 we actually had $11 billion coming into this, because this is the point. A lot of these artisanal miners, so that's where a lot of the smuggling comes from. Now, if these people had actually gone through the PMMC at the time, present-day gold board, and had exported this gold, and the proceeds brought into the country, now it would be paid for, but the much-needed dollars brought into this country, just think about what it could have done for us.
Yeah.
And so it means that even today, we're not doing much. In fact, we can do more. And if we're able to deal with that, we wouldn't have the problems that we're having with the constant depreciation and the concerns about the depreciation of the Ghana cedi. And look, even that, beyond that, so these artisanal miners, you know, the small-scale miners, if they brought these funds into the country, how much taxes would they have paid to the state, for instance?
Yep.
Okay, so we're looking at the dollars, the much needed dollars, but it also paid taxes to the states. And these taxes that are going to be paid to the state would have done a lot of things for us. So these are things that we must look at. We must not just, you know, throw our hands and just analyze it that way, but we must focus on the impact and deal with it.
Is the gold board the solution to this?
A part of the solution. I mean, they have a major role to play. If the gold board is able to enforce the whole problem, is enforcement, compliance. If they're able to ensure compliance, we're good to go.
Yeah,
because they've talked about the fact that no gold can leave this country without, you know, a license bias through the gold board. And if actually, and that's for the small and artisanal mining. And when it comes to the large scale mining, they've actually struck deals where 20% of it also would go through the gold board. So if we actually ensure compliance, we're good to go.
Let me bring you some other stories on MyJoy Online. Fitch upgrade, finance minister promises full revival of Ghana's economy. And Mahama reaffirms Ghana's commitment to deepening strategic EU partnership. Now, 4 in 10 children globally will be in Africa by 2050. So 40% of children globally will be in Africa by 2050. Just yesterday, 600,000 of our children finished BC.
Yeah.
Charlie, who really is looking at this data and planning for this?
You see,
nobody. I'll give you the simple answer. Nobody.
600,000 children.
Let me be more fair. We are paying people to plan for these things. We have a what's it called? National
Development Planning
Population
Commission. Council.
We are paying people to plan these things. But we're doing nothing with the plans. Maybe that's more accurate.
If I had authority with any of the TVET institutions, for example, as we prepare students for BEC, we scope the country, find master craftsmen, find places, and coordinate this so that we put information out to parents that, look, when your child finishes BEC, they can go and study this for 3 months or 2 months. They can do this. AI,
Look,
we know, don't know what we want.
Let me tell you something. We'll come back to the BEC thing because we'd have to help with what they can do while they're home. But I'm sure I've said this before. In 2008, I was actually, I went for an international conference. It was Wales in the EU conference, right? And at the time, February 2008, the first minister of Wales at the time, Rodri Morgan, said something, and I've never forgotten. He said his concern was that in 50 years' time, Europe was going to be the world's old people's home. Because their people are not having children. So his concern was that they're going to be the old people's home. Then he said that America was going to be the world's armory. They've been manufacturing a lot of these things. Australia, the world's quarry. Then India will be the world's office. You've seen it happening already. Today, America can outsource, you know, work to India. They're running some of the American agencies from India. And he said China will be the world's factory. But Africa, sadly, will be the world's graveyard. This was 17 years ago. As much as we were hurt at the time, nothing has been done to convince me that that would not have happened to us.
Let me put it this way. Every continent has put in effort into making this man's predictions come true, including Africa.
Now, Winston, you read a story on Ghana Water for CG earlier. Can you share that?
Yes, let's get into the details about Ghana Water being disconnected by ECG. They owe 1 billion Ghana City. So, the electricity company of Ghana has disconnected, the Ghana Water Company Limited from the national power grid over an outstanding debt of 999.6 million in a sweeping revenue mobilization and disconnection campaign targeting heavily indebted institutions. Now, the disconnection occurred on Tuesday, June 17, as ECG's task force intensified efforts to recover significant arrears from both public and private entities. And the move, according to ECG officials, is part of a broader strategy to address chronic non-payment challenges and improve the financial sustainability of Ghana's power sector. Well, now, shortly after disconnecting Ghana Water Company Limited, the task force visited the premise of the GBC, which was also disconnected for failing to settle an outstanding amount of 3,153,484 cedis 98 pesos. ECG stated that GBC had defaulted on a structured payment agreement, leaving the utility provider with no option but to cut power to the state broadcaster.
Did the TV go off?
I wasn't watching at the time.
Kojo Winston, I'm looking at the Ghana Water Company Limited proposal for review of aggregate revenue and requirements and the tariff, which they submitted to PURC in 2022. And back then, they were doing about 255 million in electricity cost every year. And Ghana Water produced about 800,000 cubic of water. We urban dwellers need about 1.5 million cubic of water a day. So they are doing just 50%, just a little above 50% of our water requirement. Now, Ghana Water is saddled with so much debt, and we are not seeing the end of it. Look, if you read their tariff proposal, and they say operating cost, right? They say the operating cost of the company is increasing with time. This is due to reasons elaborated earlier, which include GOG new policy on grants and loans. Then they go on to talk about some legacy debt to do with the, you remember the desalination plant and all those things. And Galamse is also affecting their operations. They are not getting quality water to treat, so it's increasing their cost. I think that if this continues, in about 5 years, Ghana Water will collapse. They will not get water. And it's one of the big issues that our nation must be dealing with. If they can't even pay for their electricity bills, right? They cannot buy enough chemicals. They have so many issues. Whoever is managing Ghana Water now should be able to come to all of us and tell us that these are the problems, this is how I want to solve it. Because in 5 years, if you look at the trajectory, Ghana Water can totally collapse and will not have that asset that gives us water to take care of us.
Who loses if we privatize our utilities? Just a question to ponder, right?
Bafo Ajumandia. Prof, good morning. I hope you can hear my voice. Good morning.
Good morning. And let me say good morning to colleagues on the panel.
Yes.
To my respect.
I'd like us to start with you. You've heard the speaker speak. Your thoughts on his stance and the position.
You know, when I heard the speaker the first time on this matter, And this on a very light note, very light note. When I was a kid, around 3 years, 4 years, whenever I did something that impressed my mother, he said, come, let me carry on my back to show his deep appreciation for whatever I have done. And when I heard the speaker articulate this view, I felt the same way, that if it were possible, carry me on my back. I think this is the most sustained statement to be made on the issue of conflict of interest that has really eaten deep in our governance structure. Watching the proceedings of the vetting of the judges, for one of them, I think the deputy chair of that committee, appointments committee, apparently is also the chairman of the board of the GRA, Ghana Revenue Authority. So when an issue was raised about filing tax, this individual came into a prison. It was only later I understood that, in fact, he is the chairman of the board, presiding over this committee, and on the issue of filing tax, as chairman of the board, being there to be funded. That's another illustration. But to come back to Speaker Agnew's statement, I think he has demonstrated something that all of us should be proud of. We are in this country, and parliamentarians do preside over board of state institutions. And as the speaker, the legislator is charged with exercising oversight over these institutions. How can they do their work in a legitimate fashion? So just my initial comment. I think Peter Patton has opened us up with the most vivid illustration of what conflict interest is. And I'm even surprised that at this time, as he said, as a speaker, they wanted to make to chair a board. I mean, this business, you see. So I think this gives the opportunity for part of to seriously debate this issue and seek to decouple the legislature from the executive in all ways, including this provision in the Constitution that requires the president to appoint majority of the ministers for parliament, to decouple that so that the legislature can exercise its oversight responsibilities in a more sincere and honest.
So, Prof, you were talking about the GRA board. It's chaired by Honorable George Ricketts Hagan, who is on the committee you referred to. It also has the Minister of Trade, who is also an MP. And it has Honorable Ladi Ayamba, also an MP. And Francis Xavier Sosu, also an MP. And so you believe that these people should not be there. They should just do their legislative work whilst people manage institutions like this so that they can answer to them, right?
Okay. Now, let me just bring in, Naneje Bafuewa. Naneje Bafuewa. So the constitution allows members of parliament to be ministers. So someone would argue, if they are allowed to be ministers, what would be the problem if they serve on boards of some of these agencies?
So good morning to you, your cherished listeners, and my fellow panelists. I think that when you look at it from that perspective, it may well seem to be, you may then think that there's nothing wrong with it, especially when there's no express provision of the Constitution that outlaws it. However, you need to look at the philosophy behind certain provisions of the Constitution to have a better appreciation of the issues we are talking about. You see, it's very difficult that a member of parliament is a member of a board or the chairperson of a board. The effect is different, right? It may well seem that it's similar, certainly because anything less, the impact or the negative effect is less as compared to a minister, because being a board member is a non-executive position. And, you know, for that matter, being a board chair, you are not involved in the day-to-day administration or running of the business. And so there may be nothing wrong with it. More so, when you look at most of the state-owned agencies, the law governing them, it empowers the president to appoint without a restriction as to where he may appoint from, apart from the ex officio positions, which are expressly provided from. So you might think that there's nothing wrong. But I think that it is not right, in my humble view. Because if you are a member of parliament, then you come down to chair a state-owned agency. When issues pertaining to that agency comes to parliament, which place an oversight over these agencies, in terms of answering to it, there will be a problem. Because you need to be candid. You need to be very candid in your disclosures. And when you are there, there might be some constraints. And so to avoid all that, that is why I agree with the speaker that there should be clear boundaries between Parliament and the state corporations. When we talk about conflict of interest, mostly people look at it from the perspective of personal interest. They don't look at it as anything that is likely to hamper, you know, candor in dealing with the affairs of state. Anything that puts you in a manner which would not make you perform your duty in honesty, in diligence, right, might raise issues of conflict of interest, in my humble view. And so we need to begin to take a critical look at some of these things.
So, Nana, if our laws, for instance, say, and a lot of the corporations, their acts would indicate a deputy minister or a representative from the ministry not below the rank of said that some actually will say deputy minister or minister. Now the deputy minister or minister is actually a member of parliament. If a deputy minister or minister who is a member of parliament can serve on these boards, why not a member of parliament? Is the problem then not the law itself? Because here you talked about no laws, but actually you can see some of the laws or establishing these corporations indicate membership of the board, which sometimes include deputy ministers or ministers.
That's why members of parliament. I made reference to ex officio members, mm-hmm. which is that an express provision that says that the board, a member of the board, should come from a particular ministry or organization, right? And so you are not there in your personal capacity. You are there in the capacity, a representative capacity. You understand? Now, it's fundamentally wrong. It's fundamentally wrong, and we need to look at it. Until the law is revised, it may seem right. It may seem right, but we need to look at it. Yes, it raises issues. For instance, if you have a minister for finance or deputy minister for finance chairing GRE, he might want to have visibility over what is happening at GRE. My question is there a better way of the minister having visibility over GRE without being a member of the board? If you have the minister, for instance, Agric or finance, being a member of COCO board, he might want to have better visibility in terms of what is happening there, so as to have a proactive response to events, you know, happening there. But is that the best way? You know, and historically, what has been the results? Has it helped with the ministers being there? If it hasn't, then perhaps we need to revise it. Because sometimes it is also not about very respectfully concepts, right? It's also about results, what is prudent. And so we need to weigh the two and see if it has helped. If it hasn't helped, then it might be a good opportunity for us to revise this whole thing.
But Nana, I look at Article 98 of the Constitution that says 98.2. A member of parliament shall not hold any office of profit or emolument, whether private or public, and either directly or indirectly, unless permitted to do so by the speaker acting on the recommendation of a committee of parliament on grounds that holding that office will not prejudice the work of the member of parliament and no conflict of interest arises or would arise as a result of the member holding that office. In effect, the power lies with the speaker, isn't it?
No. So, first and foremost, you need to establish whether being on a board is a position of profit. Being on a board is not a position of profit. You're only given allowance. And so it's not like you are earning salary. And so it might not count as a position of profit where you earn salary or profit from being there. Secondly, you are right. The power lies with the speaker. And so you apply to the speaker for permission to serve on a board. You go for a hearing and you defend it. Then the speaker, there will be a recommendation to the speaker to approve it or not. But you see, the law, assuming, even makes it permissive that you can serve on boards. We are looking at it from the perspective of, you know, what prevails currently. Is it the right thing to do? That is the analysis which is on the, that's the subject on the table for analysis. When you take into account what has happened in this country since 1993, has it served that right?
Quickly, just by way of clarification, because the provision says profit or emolument, and emolument would entail fees. Directors are giving some fees. You say it's allowance, but that could be seen as emolument, isn't it? So in that case, that whole thing where you talk about, yes, we're right that the power lies with the speaker, shouldn't that in itself enable the speaker to now say, going forward, we're not going to do this again, and that solves the problem?
And that is what the speaker was talking about in the interview just played, that he has challenges with that. And so going forward, we are going to see how he's going to act.
Let me bring in, Professor Bafo Ajimendua in at this point. And Professor Bafo Ajimendua, this, you know, practice has been going on for a very long time. And at the root of it, actually, many of the times we've talked about 1979, between 1979 to 1981, when the budget of the government was thrown out. And so we had a belief that we actually should bring in, you know, members of parliament also as ministers. But doesn't this in itself, while you're patting the speaker on the back, let's look at the broad picture. Isn't this a deliberate attempt by the executive to actually co-opt the members of parliament who are supposed to be the check on the executive into the executive, and as a result, deny them the much needed accountability from the executive?
In fact, this is something mind when I heard the speaker's revelations about being co-opted or attempts to co-opt him to become to be part of the executive. And when you look at critically, it could be part of this larger class approach to governance, you know, larger class or political class dominating completely. So the point you made about the 79 is that, looking back, in retrospect, I think it was a tragic mistake. The fact that the parliament was able to throw the budget out, for me, was an indication of the strength of that institution in governance. Now, you see, usually, the leaders, our political leaders, want to have the easy way in all things that they do. So, let's bring them in. And as Nana Bafo just said, if you ask yourself, has it helped for 32 years? Because if it had helped, then we can't be having state institutions year after year incurring debt. we can have the poor performance that we have on the part of these institutions, despite the fact that ministers or their reps are represented on these boards. So I don't see anything beneficial for their membership of the boards. I think we should focus on how effectively the legislature is able to exercise that principal responsibility of oversight. I think some of these things happening in our governance, the corruption, the, I can't say like collusion, because look, take the cocoa board for instance. Now we are hearing the billions of cedis or dollars that they owe. Was the Minister of Agriculture or his rep? I think it's simple. The board can meet without them. They can, their report can be requested by a minister, or they can even pose questions to the minister to clarify matters that concern them. So rather than having them sitting there and become part and parcel of their decision making, I think Speaker Bagbin has clearly articulated this problem. I heard you or somebody saying the speaker going forward, he can do something. This is the constitutional matter.
Yeah, but I mean, talking about a constitutional matter, and that's where the problem is, because we have enacted laws. Laws that actually went to parliament. Laws, some of which were passed when Alban Sumana Kingsford Bagbin was member of parliament. And these laws went to parliament. So we've passed these laws, turning around to say that shouldn't happen when you have a law that clearly says that you know, certain ministers should be on boards, and these same ministers, unfortunately, our constitution allows them to be ministers, Professor Bafo Ajimendia.
Well, that's why we are saying the Constitutional Review Committee, this is a critical issue, especially now that the speaker has come public on this. It should be one of the key issues they should resolve, the committee. I said earlier that it's in our best interest for effective governance, decoupling the legislature completely from the executive. It means that if there's a constitutional provision for this hybrid, so-called hybrid system, we are talking about now advising that our amendment will enable Parliament play its rightful role in the triangular relationship among these institutions. The independence of the legislature as they will be strengthened if we do away with these provisions requiring the President to appoint ministers from Parliament, and then getting the ministers or the deputies representing the institutions as state institutions, because state institutions is part of the executive.
Right. Now, Prof, you know, I wonder, unlike the Article 78 restriction on the President to pick the majority of his ministers from Parliament, there is no restriction on the President to appoint any board members from Parliament. The only prescription is for ministers, certain ministers or deputy ministers, to be on boards, but not for, for parliamentarians. So in the end, it, this problem could be solved simply by the President not appointing any MPs to boards. But we still see it happening all the time. What is the motivation of presidents to do this, knowing that it creates a conflict of interest?
Well, I wish our president can enlighten the way to come in of that conflict in our governance. It seems to me, to ask your question, maybe it's one way of presidents rewarding people who are stalwarts and people who have actually went. It's part of the payback. But I think it's, and I think the issue raised by which facilitation this month, they are serious, and the executive take note and together work the way to separate the two institutions. Because you're right, the constitution has a president. president.
Prof, your line is breaking. If you can position yourself.
The Constitution doesn't stop the president from appointing parliamentarians to boards, but a president who is acutely aware of this conflict of interest matter may avoid even appointing them. But if that's not happening, then I think we should have law. That's why I support the provisions of that part of the Constitution to enable a clear cut between the two issues.
Right. Now, Prof, it's interesting also that the Article 98(2) provision that Winston quoted, saying that no member of parliament shall take on any position of profit or emolument unless the speaker permits it. Interestingly, 78 also has a subclause that says the same thing for ministers. So the speaker is the one who even determines whether a minister can take on a position of emolument. So does that mean that perhaps we should actually be looking to the speaker, the one who's complaining about the problem, that we should look at him as the solution, because he ultimately has the power to determine whether or not these MPs or even ministers end up on these boards?
I'm not clear if the speaker has specific authority. If he has, then it will be the easiest way to solve the problem. So he himself has realized the clear contradiction of the issue. So in that matter, I can expect that he can lead the charge. And even if he's not giving specific authority, I think coming out publicly and so strongly and so clearly on this matter, he should begin to advocate that to attract the interest of the government in this matter and hopefully together submit to the Constitutional Review Committee. Now, if the Constitution has to be signed, then the CEO is in amendments or changing that laws. That's where the keyboard is. You see. So, as I say that, I'm not clear that having that will stop this. But if he has, then in fact he has started it and he must pursue it vigorously.
Let's welcome Professor Kofi Abuchi to the conversation. Prof, good morning. Welcome to the Super Morning Show.
Good morning.
I suppose at this point we can start looking at how to fix this obvious problem with our governance. Now, many people suggest that the simple cure for a conflict of interest is to declare it. Would that work in this case?
I don't think so, because, you know, we need to look at the practicality of it. When you look at Article 78(2), Article 78(3), and then you come to look at Article 98(2), it may well seem that the Constitution put in place safeguards to ensure that in practice there is no conflict of interest. You know, given the power to the speaker for cases of the executive and the legislature.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Bafo, we can hear you. Prof, we can hear you as well.
Okay.
Nana J. Bafo is speaking. Once he lands, Prof, you can take over.
Okay. So these are safeguards, right, which the Constitution has put in place, in fact, in the hands of the speaker, to judge in the case of a minister under Article 78(3), whether any other office he wants to hold apart from holding ministerial office is likely to conflict or constrain the performance of his duties as a minister. So the speaker, the power is in the hands of the speaker, as you rightly put it. Equally, under Article 98(2), right, as regards the legislature. But in practice, okay, you may make a case, the speaker may be swayed or persuaded to grant you all the necessary permissions for you to hold any other office apart from being a minister or a legislature. But, my brother, the problem has to do with, and I'm going to be frank with you, if you've been a parliamentarian before and you have been on a board you will begin to appreciate where the challenge is. Mostly, because we are looking at things from partisan perspective, it so happens that if you are not careful, you might not see that there is something wrong. Because when the issue comes up, you are taking it from a partisan perspective. All right? You are not looking at it from, firstly, a nationalistic view and a practical view. And so you may think, what is wrong with being on a board? Yes, after all, he's just one person going to be on a board. What difference is he going to make? Right? Let him be there. There's nothing wrong. But if we're taking our duties as parliamentarians very seriously, we're performing them very seriously, for instance, governance assurance, various committees, you know, taking on the state-owned agencies, being very prudent and probing in terms of how they perform their duties. If you are a member of parliament sitting on a board, nobody will tell you that it is wrong. It is wrong because you come to the house, answer to a committee in terms of happenings on your board, and then you come to your own colleagues, you sit before them, and then you have to answer in terms of happenings on the board. At that point, it will dawn on you that, is it right that I continue to remain on the board? Because there might be liability. There is a responsibility. Okay?
Right.
But because a lot of the people are not firstly exposed to the practice of being on a board, and in fact, the partisan nature in which we take the affairs of parliament, it makes it very difficult for people to appreciate the real challenge that the speaker is talking about. There's right. in fact a challenge. I right. have been on a board before.
Right.
I am in parliament. And if you appear before a committee, assuming you are sitting on a board and the board appears before a committee, answering to issues, you know, in relation to your corporation, you are being challenged or examined in terms of one decision or the other, and why you sitting on that board watched for that thing to happen, and you have to answer to your colleagues, and if you are doing that very seriously, my brother, a lot of things will change. Right. Let me give you right. an example.
Right, take I get that. No. Permit me to bring in Prof. Okay. Abuchi at this point. Prof, the question is still about conflict and how to cure it. And I'm interested in this because I know I've heard you speak on this before. Would this conflict be cured simply by declaration, if it's simply made known that, well, I happen to be a member of parliament? Would that cure the conflict created by putting them on a board of a state institution?
The difficulty of conflict here cannot be cured by declaration, because one can only understand this if you understand the nuances of how things work. It's imperative for us to appreciate the fact that the difficulty is the collegiality, the way Parliament operates as a collegial institution, and the camaraderie that exists between members of Parliament. And so if my colleagues understand that I'm a member of a board, and the board has deliberated on things, and the outcome has become the subject of parliamentary oversight, and Parliament is intent on scrutinizing it and possibly recommending certain sanctions, my colleagues will appreciate the fact that I'm a member of the board, and any directive intended to collectively punish the members of the board is invariably going to affect me. Now, if that is the case, the members of parliament will necessarily have the burden weighing on their minds, the fact that they are going to indirectly penalize one of their own. So it is the camaraderie and the collegiate character of how parliament operates that is what makes problematic or complicated if you simply want to rectify it by just asking that a member declares his membership. The declaration of itself will not cure the fact that I'm going to invariably exercise some level of restraint in their judgment on whether or not to apply certain penalties to the persons involved. So declaration will not cure it. Look,
Parliament fundamentally has two key functions. The first one being legislation, which we all know, but the second one is the oversight. And so if a key function of Parliament is compromised simply because you have members of Parliament who are supposed to play the oversight role, also being on the other side to be checked by the very entity which is supposed to check them, then you have a conundrum which is unacceptable. And that's exactly why a simple thing like this should not be contemplated or accepted to continue moving forward into the future.
Where does the solution sit? Is it with the Speaker, who can simply refuse every application to be on a board? Or is it with the President, who should not be appointing people from Parliament to boards anyway?
It's important to appreciate, first of all, that the Speaker doesn't have a peremptory authority. The Speaker doesn't unilaterally make that decision. The Speaker decides that together with the collectivity of Parliament. So the relevant provisions actually say that the Speaker will have to take the decision by a parliamentary resolution. So indeed, the Speaker plays an active role. And as you said, yes, the Speaker can, you know, put his strong foot on the ground and ensure that things like this doesn't continue. But it is Parliament that has to take that collective decision. As I said, it has to be by a resolution. A decision whether or not to allow will have to be by a resolution. And so, yes, the Speaker being the leader, being the administrative leader of the House, and it's imperative, it's instructive that the Speaker is the one who's complaining about this. I'm quite heartened about it, and my hope is that beyond the complaint, the Speaker is actually going to act strongly on this.
Thank you so much, Prof. Abochi, Prof. Bafo Ajumendua, and Anaije Bafuewa, for joining us this morning with your thoughts on this conversation. You can also send us your messages 055-1111-997. This is the Super Morning Show. We'll go for a quick break. When we return, we'll read some of your messages. And we also discuss this issue of ECG disconnecting Ghana Water, Ghana Water not being able to pay their bills, Ghana Water also going out for a revenue drive, ECG, so many issues in the utility space, also coming up here on the show.